SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races. And as we wait a minute here, I will fit in a few things. Let's start. We'll have Andy, as I mentioned, Serling tomorrow. And that actually timing is good because we can go over with him Friday's pick six carryover. The second week in a row that there's a big Friday carryover sequence. And I had mentioned Friday on air that you had $134,000 pick six carryover, and it was a fascinating result, actually. The sequence produced three very short prices. You had a 1-2 winner, you had a 70-cent winner, and you had a 6-5 winner. So three favorites, three crazy short favorites. Then you had a fourth, fifth, and sixth choice. And, you know, it makes it difficult when it's that, you know, obviously the favorites, maybe you had a place where you could tiptoe through, and they came actually in some short fields. And then the bigger fields, although the first leg, you had basically a 9-2 winner, 11-20, in a five-horse field. So the fourth choice of five horses in there. And so that started things off difficult for people. The toughest horse was the first-time starter, the Big Brown, for Mike Maselli. $25 winner. Canarsie Princess. It's sixth choice in a eight-horse field. And then you came back with the 60-cent winner. And then you had a $33 winner in the feature. And that was Shortcakes, the fifth choice out of eight, for Dave Canizzo, Two Tone Farms, Homebred, Kodiak Cowboy, five-year-old mare. Shortcakes was almost 16-1. And the net result, pick six paid $21,000. So that was a fun, I didn't get a chance to handicap it after our awkward situation with Case, and was kind of focused elsewhere. But congratulations to those that caught it. And then you ended up on Sunday, you had between the Mattress Mac winner on Saturday that upset the Cicada and Workaholic, that carried things into Sunday. And then Sunday, you had a 60-1 shot in the nightcap. So you got a pick five, Naira Betts pick five carryover Friday. And you've got the pick six carryover, $123,000. So second week in a row. And we'll discuss that sequence with Andy. And it's an interesting sequence. We'll see what we can make of it. All right. Might be a great way to go into the weekend. And I said California, John White joining us. And talk to John about particularly the three-year-old scene, which is heating up, given that. John, how have you been keeping yourself busy, basically, is the question, having to wait here for the resumption of racing at Santa Anita. Good morning.
Good morning. Certainly following the three-year-old scene, as always. And it was just so great to hear Casey's voice this morning when he called. Such a scary thing with him. I mean, wow. Like I was telling him, thank goodness for his mom. Being the threat that, in other words, when the when the wife pulled that card out of the deck and said, you know, as the threat, and got him in the hospital. And it's great that he sounded good. And I mean, he's the backbone of the operation here,
yes,
to speak. And you know, and then there's the withdrawals that when we didn't have your show to listen to every day. And so it's, but it's just the most important thing. I mean, and it's amazing how sometimes these curveballs we get thrown health-wise, I mean, shake us up to make us realize that's really the most important thing in
yep.
our lives.
Absolutely.
It really, really is. And we take it for granted, and it's so easy to take it for granted. But then you see something like that happen with Casey, and it just it really wakes you up to say every day you can go through without some kind of a health scare is a wonderful day.
Yeah, no doubt. It's there's as difficult as things can be, you know, out and about in your life. Then this is, you know, this is the kind of episode that really hits home. Well put. John, catch up. We didn't talk obviously last week, so we've got basically the two rebels to talk about, and hoping to catch up with Richard Mandela as well about Omaha Beach, the Baffert runner-ups that yeah, were a little you know, little shocking that both ended up falling just short, and certainly game winner's effort you know, was adequate at the very least off the layoff, and improbable too. I mean, given how wide he was, it feels like both of them can move forward off of those. And then there's long-range Toddy, who had been dancing all the dances. So it felt like we got four horses out of the Rebel. Talk about your impressions, and then feed into the Louisiana Derby.
Well, that Rebel, first of all, I want to once again congratulate Oaklawn Park for the class that they showed for putting up the money and splitting that race, because they certainly didn't have to do that, and especially when they said that originally they needed 20 to do it, and they got 19 and still did it. And that's just tremendous class in my part. And it's not surprising, because Oaklawn is a class organization. What they've done there is, throughout their history, is just almost amazing, really. I mean, I remember visiting that track with Randy Moss back when he and I were working at Louisiana Downs in 1980, and I wanted to visit it. And the first time I visited Oaklawn, it was during a period of the year they weren't even racing. And back then, when you visited a racetrack during the off season, it wasn't like today, because there wasn't the simulcast situation. So tracks were just closed up. The first time I ever saw Santa Anita in 1974, when I was visiting Los Angeles with a friend, and we drove all the way down from Spokane, Washington to Los Angeles, and I'd never been in California before, and my friend was moving back to Spokane from Los Angeles, and he had actually seen Dr. Fager win the 1968 Californian, which he said was the most impressive race he ever saw a horse run. But we drove straight down. We didn't even spend the night anywhere. It was like a 26-hour drive. And we get to Los Angeles and stayed with a friend of his, and woke up the next morning, and he said, where would you like to go on your first day in Los Angeles? Knott's Berry Farm, Disneyland, Farmer's Market, you name it, we'll go. And I said, you've known me all these years, and you're saying that? He goes, you're right. I apologize. I'm totally sorry. Santa Anita or Hollywood Park? And it was November, so there was no racing in 1974 in the Los Angeles area in November, other than the harness racing at Hollywood Park. So I said, we'll go to the harness races Wednesday, but today's Tuesday, so the answer is Santa Anita. So we drove out to Santa Anita and parked near the top of the hill, and I just saw the grandstand and so forth, that even because the track was closed up, you didn't have simulcasting, so we just walked around, and I got a look at Santa Anita. And then that Wednesday evening, we went to the harness races at Hollywood Park. I still have my program from that evening. And so that was the way I kind of got initiated with California. But you know, it's like I say, Oaklawn Park. We got there, and I mean, when you think about how the attendance on many racing days surpasses the population of the city, you don't see that very often. So that was an impressive aspect to Oaklawn even back in 1980. So again, I just want to say that was a lot of class by Oaklawn. And you know, one thing about that long range Tondi, I was very tickled that John Court won that race. First of all, here is a jockey that knows how to spell his first name.
Bah.
So that's always been impressive to me. And I got to know him in 1980, going back to that same year at Louisiana Downs. And I had to be one of the first persons to ever write about him in print. He was just an apprentice. And, you know, I've been following his career ever since. And I thought that was just a superlative ride that he gave Long Range Tondi, who was part of the pace. And he got Long Range Tondi back off the pace and then finished strongly to win the race. And, I mean, that was... And it's a lot of credit to Long Range Tondi, too, because it kind of takes a somewhat special horse to be able to do that kind of thing, honestly. I mean, usually a horse has got a running style, and they got to stick in that style. They're either a pace horse or a come-from-behind horse. To be part of the pace early and then come from behind like that is unusual. And then on top of that, to beat a horse of the caliber that he did in Improbable, you know, I think Improbable probably relaxed a bit once he made the lead, and it was his first race since the Los Alamitos Futurity, so it's not like totally, you know, it is understandable that maybe he would get caught like that. On the other hand, you don't see too many Bob Baffert horses, you know, in terms of once they've got the lead like Improbable did at the head of the lane, they usually finish the deal there, so that's a little bit of a concern to me. But under the circumstances, Improbable, it wasn't like he ran poorly or anything. So you know, he's still one of the major players for the Derby. Long Range Tondi earned a lot of respect for me coming out of the race, as did John Court with that ride. That was, I thought, something like a page out of the book of Pat Day or Eddie Delahousse, to be honest. And then you had Galilean. I didn't think exactly disgraced himself either. You know, he didn't break well. And he only got beat 2.5, 2.25 length, something like that. So that he proved he's, you know, because he'd been winning those California-bred races and so dominant in them against that competition, the question with him was how would he fare when he stepped out of that into the open ranks. And he proved that he's, it's not like he doesn't belong. So, I mean, that was, I thought, a good race on his part. And then the other race was just, to me, one of the best races I've seen in a long, long time. That stretch battle between Omaha Beach and Game Winner was just really fantastic. And I was high on Omaha Beach going into the race. I had him ranked number 8 on my top 10, and I don't think too many people around the country had him in their top 10. In fact, a lot of the top 10s or 20s that I saw, he wasn't even in the top 20s. He was on Derby Watch, but toward the bottom. But there were a lot of top 20s. He wasn't even included. And I really thought that the light bulb went on with Omaha Beach in that race in the slop, going 7 furlongs. Michael McCarthy had a first-time starter in that race that I kind of learned through the grapevine that they're very high on. And this Omaha Beach put him away going into the backstretch like he was nothing. And that Omaha Beach to open up 10 in a 7-furlong race like he did at the head of the lane and then just come in and win by 9, you know, you can go back to Jay Pridman and his always interesting pre-Del Mar article that points out the 2-year-old scene going into the Del Mar meet. And you can go back to then that they were high on Omaha Beach. And he just kind of got this reputation as being a maiden that really didn't want to win, but when you really sink your teeth into those races, those were tough races, and one went by some pretty nice horses, and it wasn't like Omaha Beach was disgracing himself. In fact, you can go with the Nolo Contesto race, and they're so high on Nolo Contesto, but you got to remember that even in that race in which Omaha Beach finished second, he was even money that day, and he stumbled at the start. So, I mean, I thought, really, maybe with a better start, he would have beaten Nolo Contesto on that occasion. That was just before the nine-length romp and the swap. The pedigree's there, and I would just be so tickled if Richard Mandela won a Kentucky Derby. I mean, he's done every single thing else practically in the game, including those Breeders' Cup days in which he was just magnificent. And Rick Porter, I would be pleased, too, considering what's happened with him in the Kentucky Derby through the years. That would be just so satisfying from a lot of respects to me if Fox Hill Farms and Richard Mandela teamed up to win the Kentucky Derby. And I think they got a colt that has the credentials to do it now. I've put him at number one on my list. I was going to put Game Winner and keep him there, but then I thought, well, you know what? Omaha Beach did win the race, so I don't really see any reason to put him at number two at this point. I'll go ahead and put him at number one. And I have him number one basically by a nose over Game Winner as far as my top ten. So, because Game Winner, that was a very impressive race on his part, too, when you consider he hadn't run since the Breeders' Cup. And honestly, at the eighth pole, I thought Omaha Beach had the Rebel pretty much in hand, quite honestly. The way that Game Winner has so much determination, I thought he might make that belated late run, and he did. And so that was just a very exciting race, I thought. And those two are, like I say, that division of the Rebel, they now have the top 1-2 on my Kentucky Derby top 10, so... And then you mentioned the Louisiana Derby. You just had on one of my favorite guests that you have. I kind of have a Hall of Fame of Steve Bick guests. And Dale Romans is one of them. And Mark Cassie is certainly one of them, too. And he is such a class individual. And But I was listening very carefully to what he was talking about with War of Will, of course. I mean, you want to talk... Steve, I've seen thousands and thousands and thousands of races in my lifetime. That has to be one of the flukiest, weirdest, unusual things. Mark used the word unique. I mean, to have what happened to him, and like Mark says, because I was watching War of Will break, because with the big field, you know, a fairly big field there in that Louisiana Derby, the break's important, and... I mean, he broke like a shot, like Mark said. I mean, he broke beautiful. I thought he might go right to the lead. And the next thing you know, you see, I didn't really see it the first time live. And I was thinking, well, maybe they're trying to rate him, you know, to get him accustomed to see what he can do well off the pace or what's going on here. But, I mean, they went into the first turn. And I was watching the race with my wife, and I told her, I said, boy, I think he's in big trouble. I just don't like the way he's going. And, of course, you know, then he gets well beaten. And then we find out what happened, you know, in short order after that race. And, like I say, what a freaky, fluky thing. But to hear Mark talk so optimistically about him this morning, Mark comes up with great observations, such as, he was saying such a big deal was being made of the 6 weeks between the Louisiana Derby and the Kentucky Derby because it's kind of an awkward time frame, as we know. I mean, when they used to run the Louisiana Derby earlier in the year, then they would come back often in a race like the Arkansas Derby. But this 6 weeks pretty much means you're going to run in the Arkansas Derby and have to train use that 6 weeks. But now that 6 weeks, which seemed to be a negative, could be a big positive, and I'm sure that they're not going to, you know, like he was saying, they're not going to push him, but if he was good enough that if they wanted to take him to the track to train this morning, I mean, that's as big a sign right there that he's still in the ball game at this point. Now, as you asked the very pertinent question, you know, is he going to be checked out when he gets to Kentucky? at Lexington, and because it would make sense that he would, and he is. They're going, you know, they're going to go over him with a fine-tooth comb, as they say. But if he checks out, and use the phrase, if he gets all the green lights, and at this point, if he was good enough to go to the track this morning and train if they wanted, you have to assume that there's a very good chance he's going to get the green lights. And that when Mark said, you know, we plan to put him back, you know, go back to the track with him Friday because that would be part of the treatment for this situation he's in. You know, he's still in the ball game here, and his price will certainly get better because there's going to be a lot of people with concerns. You've heard John DeSantis say many times, Johnny D, that you just can't have the hiccups on the road to the Kentucky Derby, and for the most part, that's true. But there are exceptions. I mean, it isn't like every single Kentucky Derby winner went in there without any single hiccup, and I'll cite you one right off the top of my head, and that's Secretariat. Because Secretariat was rolling along as the defending horse of the year and looked invincible heading into the 1973 Kentucky Derby. And then we had a race called the Wood Memorial in which Angelite pulled the big upset and Sham beat Secretariat for second. And that wasn't exactly an unhiccup because 2 weeks before the Kentucky Derby, and remember, that's the thing. We're not talking about a month before the Kentucky Derby like now with the Wood. It was 2 weeks before the Kentucky Derby that Secretariat got beat like that. And then we come to find out there's this big abscess in his mouth and that, you know, it was affecting him. And that's a pretty good hiccup right there, pretty close to the race. And yet Lucien Lauren was able to get Secretariat, you know, back in top shape quick enough to set a track record in the Kentucky Derby that still stands. So, like I say, you certainly prefer not to have any hiccups, and you don't want any, but it's not like, you know, if Orwell can go back to the track and go forward starting Friday without any hiccups, he's still in the ball game, in my opinion. So, and then it's interesting, I really like the way you've articulated it, Steve, in terms of Todd Pletcher, because everybody was writing the guy off, and boy, I wasn't one of them. Because it kind of last year, Pletcher just went on a flurry of wins, you know, on the road to the Kentucky Derby when kind of people were wondering about him. And all of a sudden, he was winning preps left and right. And all of a sudden, he's getting a number of horses to get into one of those two starting gates for the Kentucky Derby, including Sunland Derby winner, and that's another race that's very intriguing to me because I'm pretty high on this horse of Blaine Wright's, Another Twist of Fate, and I thought he ran a very good race in defeat there. Everybody was wondering, not everybody, but virtually everybody was wondering about how he would do on dirt. Well, he ran second in a photo in a track record time on the dirt, and I like the way he finished, and I think he's a very intriguing horse heading to the Kentucky Derby, and you know, you got to give a lot of credit to that winner as well. We're sitting here at this time with no, to me, clear-cut Derby leader. So it's a pretty wide open ball game right now, and that stems from the fact that Game Winner did not win his division of the Rebel, and Probable didn't win his division of the Rebel. War of Will didn't win the right. Louisiana Derby, and then we just haven't seen anybody step to the fore, so to speak.
Well, of course, coming up on Saturday, not just the Florida Derby, we got the UAE Derby as well, which is going to produce the horses that could, you know, then have options. You know, it's a very strange group. In fact, that I think they draw tonight, right? Usually, I think on Tuesday night they have their, I think, is their draw party festivities for for the UAE Derby and the rest of the World Cup card. So we'll watch for that. But then in the Florida Derby, it would seem a chance, John, for Hidden Scroll to capitalize on his potential, and you got Shug coming back with Code of Honor, Bourbon War, etc. That group we'll know tomorrow as well. We're waiting. I mean, if a horse like Hidden Scroll performs to the hullabaloo, he'll be the mojo horse, heading into the last couple of big Saturdays.
Well, there was a guest on Mike Wildman's radio show, Thoroughbred Los Angeles Sunday, that's based in Las Vegas, and he said that at William Hill in Vegas, he got after the loss by Hidden Scroll, he was checking the Derby futures and saw Hidden Scroll at 90-1 and bet on him.
Ooh.
And I have a friend in Vegas right now, and I, like I did last year with Justify, and I immediately texted and said, look, I doubt that this is, I said, but I'll tell you what, I'll take 30-1 in anything above. I won't take under 30 at this point, but if I could get 30-1 on him or higher. So he says, well, I'll definitely check into it. And he texted back and said, well, 10-1. So I said, yeah, I kind of figured it would be something like that. But I didn't want to sit there and find out somewhere down the line that certainly 90-1 would be one of those that you dream about. But like I say, I would have been quite happy at 30, and I didn't want that 30-1 even to boat to sail without me. And because that horse, I mean, he could certainly bounce back and
There's
win.
No doubt. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt.
He's one of the only one of these horses that's of the entire crop that's run a triple digit buyer.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. The question is going to be the pace scenario, and let's see where they all line up. And
and that Maximum Security is kind of an interesting wild card in that race too.
Well, and could be the Gladiator King version if in fact Hidden Scroll wants to be on the lead. Gonna have to deal with potentially with him. So, John, we'll look forward to this next round and how it shakes up yours and everybody else's view. I appreciate the visit.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
John White, everybody, and John getting ready for. I'm sure he's probably submitted the Friday card, morning lines for return to racing at Santa Anita, including that San Luis Rey. We'll come back here, 90 plus and 90 to come, and Dr. Stephen Alday standing by. We've got a ton to talk about with Dr. Alday. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
All day, all night, all day, all night, all day, all night, all night. What the fuck?
We're back in the races. Little past the bottom of the hour, and Horse Health Today brought to you by Lubricant and Reborn, Dr. Stephen Allday. And there's no doubt that over the years, the 15 years of these discussions with Dr. Allday, we've circled back to several topics. And one of them certainly was the potential for the kind of cluster of injuries and fatalities that we've seen at Santa Anita. We discussed it extensively at the time of the aqueduct and the task force that addressed the aftermath. And this is our first chance to visit with Dr. Allday to really kind of delve into some of the elements. Steve, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
All right. You know, we've watched this, and certainly you have, and, you know, the unique perspective, especially since you spent plenty of time over the years as part of your, you know, your on-track practice years ago in California. And I'd love for you just to talk about what the contributing factors can be that would, you know, get a spate of these kinds of incidents, and you know, just explain to people how, you know, how a number of horses could develop, you know, the stages of potential to break down like this.
Well, I mean, you know, I haven't been out there in a while now, so
sure.
But we have gone through these episodes in the past, even when I was there. Obviously, the one thing that you have to be, you know, and it's certainly, you know, you have to be cognizant of, number one, is that all horses are trained a little differently, fed a little differently. You know, they're made differently. Their pedigrees are different. So the one commonality that they have is that they all have to train, especially at Santa Anita, they got to train at the same racetrack. So. The fact that you're looking for something that would be, you know, across the board related to every horse there is the fact that they all train at the same racetrack. So the fact that they would want to analyze the racetrack is certainly, you know, plausible. It's an obvious conclusion, and it would be the first direction that anybody would go. I mean, it's sort of like the old smoking gun. I mean, you know, if you see a bullet hole in somebody, don't go looking for a bow and arrow. You should be looking for a gun, you know. So bottom line is that, you know, when they have long periods of rain in particular, especially after long periods of drought, which is pretty common in California, it was when I lived out there, and it tends to be the same now as well. Obviously, it changes the composition and the base of that particular track. And obviously, the first thing they want to do is when they get water on it, they tend to want to go ahead and float it and, you know, tend to scrape it and get as much water and moisture off the surface as they can. Problem is that that changes the base apparently quite a bit on that track and always has. And obviously, you know, now we're going to hear, you know, the outcry for to return to, you know, artificial surface, polytrack, things like this. I don't know if you're going to or not, but I think, you know, that certainly had enough of its own, you know, nuances or idiosyncrasies as well. But, you know, it all comes down to this, Steve, is, you know, I mean, breakdowns as much as anything, besides the fact that it is a commonality that they all have to go to the same racetrack, I personally would, from my experience and practicing, you know, on every major race circuit in America at one time or another, I would tell you that I think it's got really more to do with management than anything. I'm not talking about the management of the racetrack. Well, I'm talking about management of the livestock or the horses in particular. You know, it just, they tend to want fast works in California, always have. It's been, you know, that way for a long time. And believe me, good horses work fast. That's normal. But when you work fast over a compromised surface, and you, I don't think you're using really good, you know, management procedures or behavior.
Sure.
That you're really looking after your horse the best you can be. I remember, and I can tell you this like it was not too long ago, that when it would rain, guys like Charlie Whittingham, Bobby Frankel, I mean, you know, the real, real good horsemen would not still just go ahead and put these horses on a steady diet of works. They'd just send them out there and let them jog and then wait for the track to get good. And then even then, because they if they've been off for a while or had 2 or 3 weeks, and sometimes you'll get 2 weeks straight of rain out there, they would just bite the bullet, look for different races. If that horse is, you know, that were on top of races, things like this, they'd go ahead and run, but they wouldn't run their really good horses. You know, they'd skip or they'd miss a start or they'd do things. So, you know, I'm going to say individual trainer management or lack of experience management or, you know, it's I mean, I don't want to point fingers because I don't know as many of the trainers out there. I know a handful of them now that, you know, I've known from other other parts of the world when they come back and worked with outfits here before they went there and whatever. But, you know, it's just, I just think that it might be a reflection that maybe they're just not managing their horses as good as they probably should. I mean, I can't, that's really the only difference that I can see after what's happened in the past. And, you know, when you've got one that flexes a little sore, a little filling in an ankle, you know, hey, man, you know, I mean, throw the calendar out the window. Sometimes you're just going to have to, like, bite the bullet and wait, you know. They don't necessarily have to go breeze if they're not 100%, if the right track's not 100%, if everything's not 100%. Sometimes, you know, discretion, you know, being the better, you know, part of valor here in this particular case is that, you know, you live to fight another day when you do things that way. Now, look, nobody's supplied with a crystal ball, okay, myself included. But, you know, I mean, I can tell you that over the years, because I've been blessed and had a chance to work on a lot of really nice horses over the years, you know, the outfits that I've worked for will utilize that discretion and implement smarter, probably somewhat a little bit more conservative preparation and or management procedures, meaning that they'll be a little bit more reticent to go out and let one breeze on a off track or one that's been questionable for a while. And so, you know, right now, until they get it right, until you know everything's 100% and your horses are 100% as well going into it, it's probably best if you just, you know, like pull the plug and let's just let things kind of settle out before we go squeezing them and laying them down on the rail again.
Understood. And on along those lines, with the protracted weather issues and, you know, what has been pretty much acknowledged as a tighter surface that, you know, was being sealed on a regular basis, one of the discussions, Steve, has been, you know, the potential to, you know, go back to some track maintenance concepts before sealing became a regular habit and practice. And to reiterate what came up a couple of weeks ago, and you can probably speak to this because your career probably spans ahead of the time when sealing became so much a regular practice. But the idea always was if we keep the track sealed and don't let all the rain get into it, and then it takes a couple of days for the track to dry out.
Right.
From your experience in dealing over the years and seeing how the concept of sealed racetracks and horses going over it, the pounding, I remember we started talking about the micro fractures that can develop under that scenario that then get, then are basically a recipe for, for horses getting more significantly injured or killed. What's your thought about this, about going back to the practice of letting the rain get in the racetrack and just living with muddy tracks for a day or two and not being so concerned about keeping moisture out of the surface?
Well, it's interesting. I had the same discussion with somebody not too long ago, and first off, you have to understand, I don't think the understanding is really part of the problem. I think just the focus on the fact that you have a racetrack in Southern California, or actually these three racetracks in Southern California that the Thurb is on, that are located in a desert climate. Okay, which tends to be low humidity, high amount of sunshine with minimal, typically throughout like the bulk or the majority of the year, with minimal shade or cloud cover, okay, minimal at best, okay? So this is a perfect scenario to make a really dry, hard racetrack. And the fact of the matter is, you can't really put enough moisture on it without it drying out fast enough, because it doesn't really penetrate deep enough, no matter how much you do, because the sun dries it up before it basically penetrates. Okay, so this is something they live with on a regular basis there. Now, you reverse the roles, you bring in a long period of shade and or cover, meaning that the sun's not going to be out, it's not going to evaporate it, number one. Temperature drops down in the wintertime, typically, because that's when these rainy situations occur, and it has a long time to penetrate and get deep. Well, they're trying to overcome nature, okay? And it would be, other parts of the world, like in, New York, Florida, they deal with this. They see, long periods of time, rain come in, and they will gallop over it. Sometimes they'll even have easy works, but the fact of the matter is, they don't just keep they just don't keep sealing. Sooner or later, you just bite the bullet and let the thing, basically you have to wait for Mother Nature to kind of take its course. Well, those are the periods of times when we're talking about, exercising discretion and or good management practice or procedures. And it just takes good horsemanship. I don't think, common sense really is being utilized as much as it probably should here. But you know what they say, I think one of our politicians said common sense is not very common anymore, essentially. So, and trying to overcome it by procedures to allow it to dry out quickly after this rainy period is subsides or has breaks in it or whatever. Unfortunately, when they has goes on for 2 weeks straight, that's just not going to happen. So, everybody better get off the situation where they think, hey, this horse is due to work. I'm just going to go ahead, even though it's sealed, I'm just going and give him, an easy breeze even then, because the fact of the matter is, yeah, you're right, Steve. Understanding that you're in high percentage of the horses that are at the racetrack are young horses. In other words, they have not reached full physical maturity, okay? So therefore, they are remodeling bone. And they are growing simultaneously. They're putting mass on, things like this. And the genetics of certain horses will allow them to put on a tremendous amount of mass without as much development of the bone early on. And this is a perfect storm for, let's say, in a three-year-old year when you're just taking these horses and they're starting to stretch them out to their longest races they've ever had, from, you know, a mile to a mile and 16th, and then up to a mile and 8th. While they're doing this growing and developing physically at the same time, is a perfect storm for injuries to occur. So it's a fine line between what is productive, you know, development of bone and or tissue and or muscle, and what is destructive, as in one will overcome the other. They put all the bone, or they put all the body on the muscle and development, this sort of thing. Let's say if you were swimming, or let's say you go on, let's say, aqua treads or things like this, and you don't get the concussion, and then all of a sudden now you're asking this horse to go out there and take this heavier, more developed, increased mass, and you're putting more concussion on it, more cyclic concussion, meaning every stride, you know, will allow a lot of pounding and pressure on bones, long bones, and joints, and things like this. These are the things where they tend to bend. I mean, you got to remember, a bone is a tube, and a tube bends, you know, just like a metal tube. And as you stretch it and bend it enough, eventually you'll get a crack in it, and that crack, you know, will be just a micro fissure at first, and eventually it'll organize and become a fracture, and eventually it will basically completely fracture or explode. You can have a catastrophic, you know, explosion or breakdown, spiral fracture, things like this. So, you know, using common sense and heeding all the signs and backing off when things are a little bit, like, you know, shin's got a little bit of a profile, or the ankle fills up, or things around the cannon bone, or, you know, I mean, these are all signs that, hey, you know, it's time to back up a little bit. And, you know, it's in judging where you are with your surface on a daily basis. Get out there and walk on it. Check it. If it looks too hard, if it's, you know, a little greasy, you know, it's a little slippery and it's hard, you know, in the base. You know, all these things will add up to being potential injury-causing, potentially damaging events when all these factors come together at the same time.
Diagnostically, you know, one of the things that was suggested by Stronach Group was getting to a investment position of equipment, and I suppose this involves nuclear scans and being able to identify potential problems ahead. Steve, talk about that, and how practical is it to essentially scan every horse on a backstretch?
It's impossible.
That's what I mean, thought. Literally. Yeah.
Well, number one, okay, at the risk of being really, really, please, anybody out there listening, don't take this the wrong way, but you can have, you know, it's no different than in human medicine, where if you've got, you know, the Mayo Clinic, or if you've got, you know, Scripps Memorial in Southern California, or you got Sloan Kettering, or you got, you know, MD Anderson in Houston, okay, you can take the greatest diagnostic facilities on the planet, okay, and you can have all the equipment available, but if you still got Mo, Larry, and Curly running the show, you're still going to come up with the Three Stooges diagnosis. What I'm getting at is, you know, you can't divorce the common sense approach, okay? You don't need a nuclear scan to basically look at your horse to try to figure out. I mean, maybe our trainers are a little lacking some experience or something, you know, and the horses are paying the price for it. I don't know. I'm not trying to point fingers, but I'm just saying, you know, maybe we need to look at this a little bit more, you know, common sense approach-wise, and decide that, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe there needs to be an override on the, you know, what's going on. If you're having too many people go out and push the envelope when the envelope doesn't need to be pushed, then maybe they need to be under a little bit of more consternation, so to speak.
Well, I appreciate that angle on it. I want to, since we're talking bone, I want you to address and explain the bisphosphonate discussion that has come to the fore. The first mention of it I saw was about 2 years ago when Dan Ross wrote his piece for Thoroughbred Racing about it, and now you know, there's been suggestion that it could be a product that contributed to these incidents and people keeping an eye on the, you know, the incident rate around the country. I've got to address that later in the week. Dr. Parkin did his most recent analysis of the database, and I got a report on that. But Steve, explain what this product is, and essentially in older horses, it's a valuable tool to fight navicular disease, but it clearly, you know, based on all the information, is got no business being in a young horse. And explain when these came about, and whether it's anecdotally or, you know, just, you know, knowing what you know from equine practitioner, explain what this is and what people need to know about it.
All right. Well, bifosphonates, by definition, essentially are utilized and been utilized in human medicine for an extended period of time. What they are is they're used in cases of old humans with osteoporosis, meaning that you want to lay down more bone on, you know, typically in older females. It does occur sometimes in males, but mostly older females. It will lead to potentially, if you don't have these drugs, what they call pathological fractures or soft bone disease, things like this. In horses, okay, a drug called Tildren, T-I-L-D-R-E-N, has been utilized in horses, and it was originally in France and Europe for quite some time now, you know, 20, 30 years, something like that. It's been quite a while. I can't tell you the exact date, but I know it's been around a while. People would get children here, put horses on it, and, I had a few customers do it. I actually never administered it myself, but I did have some people that utilized it. I can't tell you, we had great results, but there was a few that were okay. Then they came up with a drug here in the United States that's in the same family of bifosphonates, and that is a drug called Osphos. Okay, Osphos is quite significantly less expensive than Tildren due to whatever, probably some way that came up with producing it and makes it a little bit more cost effective that way. But, I mean, essentially the drug was utilized, or its purpose was to be utilized in older horses with chronic navicular and or degeneration of the navicular, meaning the sesamoid that exists in the heel of the foot of the horse, and it would stop it from degenerating and basically lay some new bone down there. And in clinical studies, it showed quite significant improvement in older horses, probably 75% or better. Maybe not that high, but pretty high. And I've utilized it on some of my rope horses, but my rope horses are 17, you know, 10, 12, that sort of thing. You know, and typically I'm real cognizant of their shoeing, things like this. I personally have never utilized it in a thoroughbred of any sort, only quarter horses myself, just the ones I rope on. And I've never given it to a young horse ever, obviously, and even a quarter horse, young horse, because it just really wasn't used for that. You know, I mean, just wasn't. It never crossed my plate that way, to be honest with you. But according to what I hear here in Lexington, I mean, I've heard, you know, some very good surgeons say that this has been something that has been widespread. Obviously, I wasn't really aware of it until recently, and then, of course, other practitioners have anonymously, you know, made statements and or have gone to publications saying that is, you know, rampant in Ocala, where a lot of young developing horses are, and at the farm situation, which, you know, I mean, I consult with a number of farms, and I mean, as far as I know, they're not using it. I never recommended it. I mean, because they the theory is, and you know, theoretically, it might have application, but although in my hands, I couldn't tell you because I never used it, but for that purpose. But they say that it could, if you had some radiographic changes while this animal's in a growing phase, you know, and laying down or breaking down, you know, bone and laying down new bone, essentially it could be used to change radiographs or improve radiographs. You know, I haven't seen cases of it myself, but apparently this is the story that I've been told. And then Rudin Riddle in particular made a statement here a couple of years ago, Dr. Brownledge, that it might be one of the bigger problematic causes of early breakdowns in horses. And I thought that a little strange because, like, I'm thinking, like, who the hell's using this stuff, you know? And anyway, as I find out, apparently there appears to be a few people that are Not a few, but apparently quite a few. According to, and I can't tell you from actual experience or knowledge that of anybody that has or uses it, but that's the rumor going around. And maybe it's more widespread than I'm aware, obviously. But I can tell you that the horses that I deal with, I don't think they're getting it. At least they're not getting it for me anywhere. So
I have no issue with this topic coming to the fore, and there's been as recently as yesterday, of course, the three sales companies all put in a policy that any buyer of a horse can ask for a test, and if a horse comes back positive, this being young horses that go through the ring starting July 1st beyond, the pending buyer can refuse the sale if somebody comes back positive. Having been at the Maryland, I was at the Maryland regulatory meeting on Thursday, Steve, and the Mid-Atlantic group, the THA, they had been working for several months and had gained approval from all of the member THAs well in advance of any of this stuff happening. They were in the process of putting in a bifosphonate policy, and and they have executed it. The one thing that I'll say, there was... bringing this up and getting everybody to agree, much like we all agreed on steroids and getting it out of the game and getting this out of young horses as a matter of practice, absolutely seems like the right thing to do. At the same time, I got to say one thing about the way this discussion is being utilized, which is in one publication, having a Florida-based veterinarian suggesting that the 22 fatalities in California, and as far as I know, the unnamed Florida veterinarian that's widely quoted, never actually practiced or saw any of these horses, but the supposition that somehow bifosphonates is heavily skewed in these 22 horses is a little bit of a, to me, reckless and irresponsible suggestion, particularly because of the 22 horses, 11 of them are homebreds. So there's really no reason why anybody's homebred that's not going through a commercial market would allegedly use this kind of a product. Let's see, one horse came from a seven-year-old came from Arcana. I don't think that horse got any bifosphonates. Certainly a horse like Battle of Midway, who had a very productive career, clearly he hadn't had any. So let's see, that's 12 out of 22. So that gets us down to 9 horses that were not homebreds and might have gone through the ring. So to make suggestions, frankly, that this product, which I think everybody agrees is better off not being used for young horses, in young horses at all, but to just idly speculate that people in the industry are just using this willy-nilly and it killed 22 horses is preposterous and
absolutely
irresponsible.
I tell you what, it's for someone to anonymously come up with that, number one, and being an equine practitioner, supposedly, without checking data and or the facts, is irresponsible and would fall into the category of fear mongering. They're either trying to, they're trying to bust somebody else or create a problem or whatever. The bottom line is that, I don't know if it's as widespread as, I'm just not aware of it because I've never dealt with it, so I can't really comment. But for someone to just blatantly come out and suggest that, I think is extremely irresponsible, and really they should be, of course it's, someone, it may not have been, but they're saying it's a vet, but I'd have to see who it was first before I believe it. So
speaking of which, and while we're on this topic, we're not going to address the Lasix thing right now because you and I have discussed it for over a decade, repeatedly. I did see something that has gone, I think, a little under the radar. And did you see the AAEP coming out against pin firing and blister?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, exactly. And I'm not a big. I mean, I still pin fire, okay, and use judiciously and different situation there because, you know, I have better luck, you know, doing cryotherapy to curbs. But, you know, there are horses that need to be pin fired, and I think judiciously utilized, it works fine, you know, and I don't have a problem with it, but I don't understand why they've come out with this. I mean, if they tell me I shouldn't do it anymore, I won't do it anymore. But the bottom line is, I mean, I've done it effectively for the last 35 years. I mean, you know, they're going to have to show me where it's not a good idea, you know, as far as, you know, because I've had great success with it. Horses come back and do quite well with it. So, you know, that's just my opinion. But, you know, obviously if they tell me it's, you know, we're going to change that and that's not going to happen anymore, I guess I won't be doing it anymore.
there's plenty of people that will answer and say that it's barbaric to some degree and that it, you know, in the current climate, Steve, just doesn't really fit where we are. What alternatives are there for treatment that currently blistering or pin firing utilizes?
Well, the only other thing you're going to be able to do is blister. I mean, you know, it's counter irritant, but that's what essentially what you're doing when you pin fire too. Except you're doing a little deeper penetration. You're using a thermal cautery, you know, through the skin down to the surface of the periosteum. And trying to get bone, you know, to stimulate it with the blister, trying to stimulate, you know, the counter irritation to lay down more bone and to help, you know, increase circulation so you can heal microfractures, things like this. Because that's essentially what you got. Now, you know, if they can't come up with a better alternative, what are we going to do? You know, I mean, because just topical blistering and a long time off, sometimes you come back, you still have the same problem.
How painful is it? Is it painful?
It's not painful because you use an anesthetic when you do it, and then essentially, you know, afterwards we put them on some anti-inflammatories and we paint it, you know, to cauterize it and to get a blister or increased circulation there. And of course, you know, so they won't mutilate. They'll either put a cradle or a bib on them. And I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've never had really many problems with it. I'm sure you could get secondary infections, and you could do that if you inject a joint. But bottom line is, I mean, if you do all the, you know, you prep and you take care of it and do the post care the way you're supposed to, you shouldn't have that problem. So I'm a little, that's a little perplexing, this whole situation is with not wanting to pin fire, but like I said, you know, they've been wanting to do this for a while. So this is not something new. This has been in kind of getting ready to come to the forefront for about the last, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years. So.
Yeah, this one, and I'm very surprised how it hasn't, especially in this climate, Steve. I'm shocked that it hasn't gotten more attention. This little nuance, and I guess they issued a statement paper or a sort of a Well, glad to connect and to touch on, you know, a couple of the rip from today's headline concerns and. For whatever 15 years we've been having these discussions, it's always going to be fresh for someone that hasn't heard them before. So I appreciate you taking the time and your always frank assessments.
No problem, Steve. Enjoy it. Thank you. Take care.
We'll talk as soon as next week with Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. And you visit Lubricin.com. You can go to theallwayalldayway.com, thealldayway.com, where Steve and Alex Hassinger, the man who started Cigar, they will answer your questions about any kind of horse you got. Your sport horse, your trail horse, your pasture ornament, whatever you got, you can interface with the Dr. Allday and with Alex, and a terrific resource. And there's lots of, you know, Q&A material at thealldayway.com. The amazing Dr. Allday, who I'm never shy about letting him rip. he's going to tell you what he thinks. We'll take a time out here. We're about 10 plus into hour three. Rich Migliori, who, of course, does work for Fasig Tipton and helps put together the catalogs. Rich is over at the sales grounds. Want to talk to him. First thing we're order of business is congratulating him on his son Joseph's engagement, which is really cool. And, of course, Joe works for West Point. But then we're going to talk about the whip situation, and I'll discuss it, of course, with Tony on Thursday. And we'll let two guys who between them won 10,000-plus races, we'll let them explain how this is, if this can work and how it might work. carrying a crop and not using it. We'll see. So Rich Migliori is going to join us next. And I just received a missive from Pat McKenna at NYRA. Congratulations to David O'Rourke, who has officially been announced as the unanimous appointee as CEO and president of NYRA. And he'll do a great job. He's been doing a great job for his 8 years there. Back after this, Rich Migliori, Hour 3.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.